In blind taste tests, our Asda Extra Special Luxury Mince Pies proved as tasty as M&S Collection Mince Pies. And while a six-pack of theirs is £3.50, ours are only £2.75 for six, saving you a sweet 75p. We asked our new Chief Quality Officer, Michael Bublé, what he thought.
Well, I could have told you that. M&S tasted Asda price, right?
Asda. That's more like it. Selected stores subject to availability. Taste test October 23. Prices checked in-store 5/12/23. For verification, see asda.com/tastematch.
You can't beat the feeling of the team you've backed scoring a last-minute winner. Or the ball landing on your lucky number 7 on the roulette wheel. But at LiveScore Bet, we know that when it comes to betting, nothing is a dead cert. That's why we want you to get the most out of betting with us responsibly. We've got a range of tools to help you stay the right side of the line, from deposit limits and spending controls to a cool-off period. Visit the Safer Gambling section on LiveScoreBet.com or download the app for more details. Bet responsibly. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
We are back with the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris, joined here by Kartik Krishnayar. This podcast, for the first time in quite a while, we're doing it together. Reason being is that Kartik is in town, and this actually segues really well into the topics we're talking about today, because one of the main topics we're talking about is a lot of the words mentioned by MLS Commissioner Don Garber from his State of the League address, which covers many different topics, which are perfect for this podcast. He talked about Apple TV, he talked about the calendar, he talked about other leagues. Well, Kartik is in town to see me, of course, but also for a major reason, which is, I'll let you explain.
Yeah, which is one of those other leagues, which is USL and Sporting Jacksonville, new team in USL, both on the men's and women's side. And this is going to be really unique in that they're going to use the same branding for the men's pro team in the USL Championship and the women's professional team in the USL Super League. They launched today. So I'm in town to cover the launch. We have a lot going on in the Jacksonville area, the Jacksonville Armada, an existing team that was previously in the NASL. They were a second division team, has played adult amateur the last few years, are joining MLS Next Pro, which we're going to talk about, among other things, on this podcast. And then now we have the launch of this team that is going to play in both of the USL, the top leagues in the USL structure, the second division on the men's side, which is USL Championship, that's the top USL league, and then the USL Super League on the women's side, which is going to be a co-first division with NWSL. So huge launch today. That's why I'm in town, to cover that launch. And Chris, a guy by the name of Tim Tebow, and another guy by the name of Fred Taylor, that those of you who listen to this podcast and think we're just soccer snobs and we don't like other sports, well, those two guys both went to the University of Florida, where I went to school. I was in school when Fred Taylor was a running back. So huge thrill to see those two guys as part of the ownership group. A personal thrill for me to see them as part of the ownership group today that was unveiled for this new USL club here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, so Don Garber's State of the League address, which is every year he does the same thing right before the MLS Cup final, and talks about, you know, future plans and expansion and how things are going. So before we get into some of the things he did talk about, the most interesting things, a couple of the quotes that came out of this State of the League address. The first quote is, talking about MLS, of course, "We wanted to be part of the global conversation, and now we're the dominant story in global soccer." And then the second one was that the eyes of the world are now on MLS. And I think Don Garber and doing the State of the League address, a lot of it is PR, a lot of it is, quite frankly, BS. A lot of it is he's a businessman trying to sell the league, trying to talk about how great it is. But oftentimes, I think people take things that he says at face value and don't kind of think about or analyze what he's actually saying. From personal experience, being in England in August on the same weekend as the League's Cup final, major story, right? Like MLS, Messi, Nashville, etc. That weekend, being in England, I didn't hear anything about League's Cup, not in the newspapers, not on TV, not in talking to people. Everyone was talking about England in the Women's World Cup final. So I think part of it too is, if you look at, you know, social media, or if you're looking at, you're watching MLS Season Pass and see Messi score all these goals. That's fantastic. But the reality is that, I mean, MLS is not part of the global conversation. Well, it's part of the global conversation, but they're not the dominant story in global soccer. And I think him saying that the eyes of the world are on MLS, yes, people are watching, but they're not watching as, you mean, aggressively or in the numbers that he believes or he wants to believe that people actually are.
Yeah, and that same weekend here in the U.S., I think there were people in my circles talking about the Leagues Cup final, but far more people were talking about England and Spain in the Women's World Cup final.
Yeah.
Even in the American soccer world, that tended to be the dominant story because it was a World Cup final. It's no insult towards MLS to say they took a backseat to a Women's World Cup final. But you can't have this kind of hyperbole and be taken seriously when we know that wasn't the case.
Right.
And we know they're not the dominant topic of conversation in global soccer. In fact, I think after that point, interest in Messi globally and Inter Miami kind of receded, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of the high point, was that maybe that Open Cup final was the high point.
No, I think it was, I mean, basically after that Leagues Cup final, I think that was it. It was kind of like the peak. And then shortly thereafter, right, the European seasons were in full swing. But this is the England-Spain Women's World Cup final. And this is before any of the controversy
happened with the kiss. Right.
You mean, so the kiss took it to a different level. So that was the first thing that Garber was talking about. That kind of like when I heard those words, I'm like, that's not really reality. Some of the most interesting things that did come out of the State of the League address was, number one, that they're continuing to look at the schedule every year. But he mentioned that an apertura clausura split season is something that they've been thinking about. And Kartik, you and I have been talking about this for, well, numbers of years, but I mean, majorly so probably in the last 6 to 9 months, saying like they seriously need to consider doing this split season because the season's too long. There's too many teams. And then kind of basically, you know, after a couple of months, you lose interest in the season. There's nothing to play for. But Don Garber mentioning apertura and clausura, that's promising. It still would be single entity. It still would be, I mean, within the closed system, but at least it's a better structure for the calendar.
Oh, absolutely. We did it in NASL when I worked at NASL. I'll caution Don Garber and Dan Kortmanch and the guys who run communications for MLS. It was such a hard sell to our fans. I had to go on radio shows like this, podcasts like this, basically that every fan group did in our league to explain to them, this is not going to be any different. This isn't going to be radically different from what you experience. They would call it like craptistic schedule and all sorts of things. Why would we get rid of the normal format? Eventually, NASL fans embraced it because what it did is it made every game much more important. So without promotion and relegation, it was the only way at NASL we felt like we could keep teams competitive and keep fan bases engaged if your team is so far back, because then you have the second half of the season. We called it fall and spring. We didn't call it apertura and clausura. I think it would be really good for MLS. And I think you break it up with Leagues Cup in the middle. Yeah. You play Leagues Cup in the middle of it. I think it would work.
Yeah, and for 2023, imagine if Leagues Cup was the break in the middle and then the season, the second half of the season started right after that. So at that point, then Messi and Inter Miami would have, you mean, an opportunity to go all the way and win the trophy. I mean, they didn't make the playoffs. But them just even mentioning it is a positive sign in that at least they're open to that possibility. So the second thing that I thought was most interesting that I pulled out of this, you know, 1 hour conversation was that there might be changes to MLS's participation sometime in the future in the US Open Cup. And those are the words from Don Garber. So he said that there might be changes. They're discussing, talking things over with US soccer. They've been on record in the past about saying that they have some issues that they want to fix. Kartik, is this a kind of a, you mean an alarm bell ringing here, or is this that just, we should just ignore it and forget about it?
It is alarm bell ringing. Let's just remind the listeners, MLS or Soccer United Marketing, which is the marketing arm of MLS owned by MLS owners, was the marketing agency of record for the US Open Cup until this year. And now that US Soccer has brought it back in-house, MLS suddenly has all sorts of problems with Open Cup. And I think the part of the motivation for League's Cup was so that they had a cup competition they controlled and that they kept the revenue from. This is about revenue. This is about sponsorship. This is about TV money. The TV deal with Turner Sports, that U.S. Soccer negotiated includes the Open Cup. And then, obviously, we saw what CBS did with Open Cup this past year. That deal, that sub-license deal, would not have been possible if some were still managing it. It would have all been on Apple, actually, the whole Open Cup.
Yeah.
So I think this is about that. This is about sponsorship and television. Do I take the threat that MLS will leave the Open Cup at some point seriously? Yes, I do, because they want to control all their revenue streams, which may seem acceptable from a business standpoint, but it's not acceptable from a soccer competition standpoint. And so those things are coming at loggerheads.
Yeah. So with that, though, too, I mean, MLS, in order to, if they did want to exit out of US Open Cup, they can't, because it's the Pro League standards maintains that they have to participate in that competition.
To be a sanctioned league, yes.
So is there any way around that?
I don't know if they would allow teams to opt out, or maybe they have their own qualification tournament and say, hey, we're only going to take, well, how many teams do they have now? 30? They'll only take 16 spots.
Right.
At once upon a time, remember, MLS teams had to play into Open Cup. Do you remember those days?
Wow.
Yeah, way back when.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that was kind of strange, was every USL team got in those days, but there were MLS teams that the teams that did not make the playoffs had to play into the Open Cup, whereas the teams that made the playoffs automatically went to a later round.
Right.
So it was structured differently then. Now you have a situation where you have 10 MLS teams next season that have qualified for the CONCACAF Champions Cup. The assumption is maybe they'll be given some preference in scheduling for the Open Cup to maybe placate some of MLS's concerns. So let's watch that. That might happen.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe they don't compete in the US Open Cup because they're playing in the Champions
Cup. Well, that could be happen too. Right.
So before I get to the third point that he mentioned, and this is talking about MLS season pass, going on about the second point in terms of MLS's participation sometime in the future in the US Open Cup is up in the air. But he did also talk about other markets, talking about expansion. And Don Garber did say, I think there are other cities where there's great opportunity to expand MLS. Phoenix is an exciting market. Tampa is an exciting market. There was a time when I thought we would have a team in Detroit. But Sacramento is a great soccer market, and the USL is doing a great job there. Let's see in time how all of this plays out. And if it makes sense, we'll take a look at it. And I think in other interviews he did recently, too, he talked about Jacksonville as another city that is an exciting market. So when he's dropping these names, Kartik, he's mentioning Phoenix, Jacksonville, Tampa, Detroit, Sacramento. I mean, again, what can we read into this?
He's also mentioned San Antonio in recent interviews. They're all markets with existing USL clubs, or as we talked about at the top of the podcast, the reason I'm up here this week is because Jacksonville will have a team in the USL championship in the very near future. So they're all USL markets where they're trying to poach existing USL brands or put the USL team out of business. There are two models, right? They have taken USL teams up in markets in the past, Cincinnati, Orlando, obviously an NASL team in Minnesota, NASL team in Montreal. But now the new model, Chris, appears to be go into existing USL markets, Charlotte, St. Louis, San Diego, and displace the USL team.
Right. Yeah. Kartik, for those of you who don't know, is the author of the book called Soccer Wars, which you talked about your experience in working with NASL, but talking about NASL, USL, and MLS, soccer wars never ends in this country, unfortunately. But so let me play you a clip. This is actually from halftime of the MLS Cup final. You probably didn't get a chance to hear this, but this is an interview that Stu Holden and John Strong did with MLS Commissioner Don Garber. Let me play this. I just want to get your reaction about what he says.
We talk about a global superstar in Lionel Messi, but one of the big focuses for the league has been the player pathway from academies, MLS Next Pro, all the way up to the senior team. We see some great examples on the field, Nathan Morris and Patrick Schulte today. How big of a focus is that now for MLS?
You know, Stu, the great story about what it is that we're thinking about and growing the game is at the top, guys like Lionel Messi, but from the bottom, MLS Next, MLS Next Pro, really building the foundation and the ecosystem of soccer in America. We're so committed to that. And the Columbus Crew are a great example. All of our clubs are deeply committed to this idea of the building the pyramid and ultimately building the sport from the top and the bottom.
So he mentions building the pyramids and building the foundation. What's your take on this? And this is probably the first time you're hearing this.
Yeah. So I watched the MLS Cup final on Apple, so I didn't hear that interview. That is MLS code for saying we're going to try and consolidate the pyramid under our control. Mm-hmm. So when you go to academy, you're going to have to go to an MLS academy affiliated with an MLS club or a independent youth club that might be an elite youth club that's part of the MLS Next ecosystem. Then we're going to want you to begin your professional career in MLS Next Pro, not go to USL, go to NISA, wherever else, or NPSL. And then we're going to try and move you into an MLS club. It's going to be a consolidated system. And when you read between the lines and you talk about the cities he mentioned in expansion, it's okay, we're going to knock USL out. Basically, MLS Next Pro is a rival league to USL. We're seeing that here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. It's a rival league. They are very deliberately going into markets that they either think they can compete with USL in or they can prevent USL from adding teams in. Another market to watch real quickly I'll mention is the Cleveland market. I think USL might have an answer to MLS Next Pro's Cleveland team soon, or that part of Ohio. But this is a soccer wars again, and MLS is trying to consolidate everyone within their pyramid and their ecosystem. They don't want anything on the outside. It's kind of happening on the women's side too. Quite honestly, MLS Next has made a big push competing with ECNL in terms of women elite women's youth clubs. People haven't noticed that because NWSL doesn't have its own youth system. So MLS Next is actually filling the void, or at least trying to compete with ECNL on the elite level on the girls' side too, which I think is kind of dangerous from my perspective.
Yeah, what I take from it is that MLS is trying to drive USL out of existence.
Yes.
USL or NPSL or anyone. And basically from top to bottom or from bottom to top, he's talking about building the pyramid, building the foundation, actually controlling all of soccer in the United States. To me, this should be the role of U.S. soccer coming in and saying, okay, we're going to have D1, D2, D3, D4. This is how it's going to be set up. But what it is to me is MLS saying, okay, hey, U.S. soccer is too busy with the men's team and the women's team and all the lawsuits. They've taken the eye off the ball. They don't have the resources or kind of the even probably the desire to manage all this. And then MLS is saying, okay, hey, well, we'll do this for you. I mean, we're going to go ahead and build it. It would be the same to, in England, for example, if the Premier League said, okay, hey, we're going to go ahead and take control of the Football League and basically for, the Championship, League One, League Two, and non-league and actually control the entire system.
There'd be riots in England if that happened. And this thing was underway even before MLS Next launched. Really ominous development for me was when the U.S. Soccer Development Academy, you remember that well, Chris, you can know all about that with your family. They split into two tiers and they put all the MLS academies in tier one. And there were only a few independent non-MLS affiliated clubs. Then less than a year later, U.S. Soccer said, we're exiting the academy business. MLS Next was launched immediately and then took all those clubs in. So I feel like U.S. Soccer didn't take a hands-off approach. They assisted this. They created a transition without anyone else having an opportunity. And now they're consolidating. They're allowing MLS to consolidate the pyramid under their consolidate an ecosystem, because it's not really a pyramid, let's be honest.
Right.
Create an ecosystem within completely controlled by them.
Well, that's the thing, though, too. He's talking about building the pyramids. This is not a pyramid, right? Because in a pyramid, you have promotion and relegation. You can move from the bottom tier all the way up to the top tier. This, I don't know if it's not a triangle, I don't know if it's a square box, whatever it is. But, they will control the system. They're not going to build the pyramids. So to me, it's a little bit, now it sounds good, right? It sounds like building the pyramid, sounds exciting. The reality is it's not going to be a pyramid. Or it'll be a pyramid in their eyes, but without promotion relegation, without the opportunity for the most part for teams to move up through the ladder, unless they're willing to pay whatever the expansion fee is to move into that league.
In the interest of fairness, I will say USL has done some of the same things.
Yeah.
They're a franchise-based league. They've tried to sell as many franchises as possible. They want their clubs to all have academies, and they play in the USL Academy League and not have independent clubs in that or non-USL-affiliated academies. So they've done some of the same thing, but they're not in the same financial position or position with U.S. soccer or anything, finances, anything that MLS is. So the real threat comes that MLS is making an aggressive attempt to consolidate everything under their direction. And the last point on this, Chris, I hear from people who are covering MLS closely that there is more of an interest in Next Pro now from MLS executives than there's. They launched the league a couple of years ago and broke and began to pull their teams out of USL because their reserve teams used to be in various USL leagues. There's been more interest in the last 3 or 4 months from MLS executives and also MLS kind of headhunters at specific MLS clubs, at existing MLS clubs like Minnesota United and Sporting Kansas City, to name two, to go and try and attract investors into MLS Next Pro. So it's a priority not only for the league office, but now for individual MLS clubs to say, okay, I'm Sporting Kansas City. Let's see if I can get an MLS Next Club, Next Pro club in Omaha, which is close to me, which happens to be a USL market. There's a lot of that going on, I understand. So look out. It's a priority for Garber. It's not by accident he said this to Stu Holden.
Right. And that's why I thought that it's important for us to really kind of talk about what he does say, because I think, again, a lot of journalists, frankly, a lot of people take him at face value and don't really kind of think about what he's saying or don't analyze it. Like for me, for example, like to me, what's all of this is happening and what he's saying is that MLS is framing itself to be the be-all and end-all of club soccer in the United States, and taking over the role that a football association such as the USSF, or if it was a different country, if it was the English FA or whoever, should be doing. So to me, they're overstepping their kind of bounds or over the line. But if U.S. soccer's, you know, not going to say anything or not stand up to them, then and that's the thing too, from the MLS conversations with and how the stuff that was on tape in terms of Don Garber speaking to J.T. Batson, the USSF CEO, and just that conversation, it seemed that Garber was the one that had the authority and was talking down to U.S. soccer. And then the U.S. soccer was kind of scrambling back and kind of being on the defensive, when really I think it should be the other way around.
Yeah. And if you go to Spain, Javier Tebas has all kinds of problems with the Spanish Federation. They push back on when he says crazy things in the media, which he's known to do, oversells things in the media, which he's known to do. The Spanish Federation punches back at La Liga. But that doesn't happen in this country. In fact, Garber basically says, I'll take my toys and go home.
Yeah.
And you'll be stuck with this thing. And even the when he talked down to J.T. Baston, he was talking about stadiums and the venues not being proper from lower division teams. MLS teams go and play in garbage, absolute rubbish venues in the early rounds of the Open Cup. And we were talking about Next Pro. Go see the crowd at a Next Pro game. Compare it to a USL match. Compare just the crowd energy there. So they it's funny. Some of this is projection from Garber. Yeah. They're the ones with the venue problem sometimes in early rounds of Open Cup. They're saying it doesn't present well on television. Well, CBS did a wonderful job with the Open Cup. I think a lot of it that might be, hey, it's not on Apple. So for us, if it's not on Apple, it doesn't present well.
Right. Exactly. Couple more quotes too. This is one actually that he mentioned. Actually, I don't think it was on the State of the Media address or the State of the League address, but it was about a week ago or maybe 10 days ago. He spoke to Columbia University, to their business program, kind of just talking about some of the exciting things happening with MLS. This one I thought was pretty funny. So let me play this. It's a really short clip.
Puts us in a position where our league is respected by the rest of the football world more than it's respected by people here who are following global football, which is an enormous irony.
I think he's talking about us, Kartik.
He might be talking about us and some others like us. There are other critics of MLS in this country. I do think there is a little bit of truth to this, Chris, quite frankly, because there's a curiosity about MLS. When I talk to people from abroad, fans from abroad, journalists from abroad, they're curious about MLS. They think, okay, this league has sustained itself in the U.S. It's a tough environment. But then when you get into the actual structure and you start talking to them about it, they think that's really weird. That's really strange.
Yeah.
And there's still an assumption that there's promotion and relegation in the U.S. when you talk to people.
Yeah.
And I say, I support a second division club that's in USL, Miami FC. Oh, well, if you get promoted, you'll be playing Messi's team. Well, no, we can't get promoted.
Right.
Is the point. And we're in a different ecosystem. We're in USL. They're in.
Yeah.
They'll bring up a next pro team if they ever do promotion and relegation.
All right. And then the third thing he mentioned in the state of the league address, the third and final thing really, is he said that he's not prepared to reveal any viewing information for MLS games and is instead focusing on how many subscriptions MLS Season Pass has. And I have a clip about that too. This is, again, this clip is from the Columbia University discussion. And this one too is a pretty short one too, but let me play this.
And lastly, Julian, it's a partnership, and that's the most different aspect of it. After we hit the minimum guarantee from Apple, we make 50 cents of every dollar. That's the risk in this deal. I'm highly, highly confident we'll get into that revenue share.
So that's Don Garber talking about the Apple MLS deal, saying it's risky. It's risky because they have to hit a minimum guarantee. What that minimum guarantee is, I'd imagine it's subscriptions. What that minimum guarantee is, we don't know. Nobody knows. It hasn't been made public. But whatever that number is, if and when Apple and Major League Soccer hits that, then in terms of the wheels are off, right? Then it's 50 cents on every dollar in terms of subscriptions that they add from around the world. That's amazing. If that happens, that could be really lucrative for Major League Soccer. Now, what that minimum guarantee is and what Apple has decided that to be and whether they have enough ability, right? I mean, they can't sign any more Messis. I mean, you can try to get, Suarez has come in, maybe Lewandowski, maybe, or some of these players, but they're not going to move that needle that much. But that I thought was really interesting in terms of the 50 cents on every dollar. That's remarkable. But talking about MLS Season Pass, and this is a good segue, the viewership numbers for the MLS Cup final between Columbus Crew and LAFC were released recently. The viewing numbers, we don't know what the viewing numbers are for MLS Season Pass, but on Fox, over-the-air network television, it was 815,000 people that watched the game. Last year, I believe it was 1.5 million people watched it on Fox last year. Now, the big difference is, of course, MLS Season Pass. How many people watched it on MLS Season Pass? And we may never know what that number is. If it's a good number, I would think that MLS would release it. If we don't hear anything, then it's not worth mentioning.
Yeah, and I think there were another 600 or 700,000 viewers on Univision.
Last year.
Yeah. This year, their Spanish language, it's all on Apple. Well,
Fox Deportes had it.
Okay. Maybe we'll wait for that number and see how that overlays. It probably won't be the same as the Univision number. But I didn't realize the match was on Fox Deportes. So that's a positive for MLS. Yeah, I think that the interest is down because of Apple and the Apple deal. I think that it has hurt MLS's visibility, which is really a shame because Columbus plays brilliant football. I know you and I disagree on this point, strongly disagree on this point. I started taking an interest in Columbus's football when Greg Berhalter was the manager. I thought they played good football. I liked the way they played. They didn't quite win an MLS Cup. They got to a final and lost to Portland. And then kicked on with Caleb Porter with the style. And now under Wilfred Nancy, fantastic. And the atmosphere in Columbus matches the atmospheres in Germany or England, which is the only place in MLS. Well, maybe if Kansas City hosted a final, I could see them producing that kind of atmosphere, but very few atmospheres like this. So this would have been such a great showcase for MLS if it had been on ESPN or ABC. And they could have put it up against a Bundesliga match or against a Premier League match and said, this is great atmosphere. This is great, at least from one of the sides, great football. LAFC, very negative, very disappointing the way they set up in that match. But unfortunately, there was less buzz about it. This should be the triumph of MLS because this is a young manager in Nancy who's come to this country, has done a remarkable job. They're playing incredible football.
Yep.
The atmosphere is amazing. it does feel like you're at a Borussia Dortmund game, right? With the gold kits, yellow kits, and the atmosphere. But instead, this was on Apple, and it also was tainted by MLS's own missteps several years ago with that Columbus crew club, which is why Don Garber ultimately got booed the trophy presentation. And I know a number of crew fans, many of them I became friendly with during the Save the Crew movement. They're not forgiving Garber.
Right.
They're glad they still have their club. They're the parade, everything, the atmosphere in the city after is like, it's like winning a Super Bowl, right? In mm-hmm. American football.
Yep.
That's how big it was in Columbus. And it's, by the way, it wasn't that way in LA in that last year. And most places MLS Cup winners have had. It was that big in the town, but that doesn't mean they like the league or they like Commissioner Garber. So this all puts kind of a asterisk next to this great accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah. And the viewing number two, also, it was free on Apple TV. And then it was, it was on MLS Season Pass, which you have to subscribe to, but it was free on Apple TV, free on Fox. And then Fox Deportes is usually through cable or satellite or streaming. So will we ever find out what that number is? Probably not.
I don't think we will.
Unless it's a great number.
Unless it's a great number. In fairness to the people who push back on us saying that we're not fair, I will say in the interest of fairness, because this match was advertised on Apple TV Plus for non-season pass subscribers. Now, in the past, there have been free games all season, mm-hmm. but people didn't know that, and they would say sign up for season pass.
Right.
Watching Apple TV on Saturday, the interface did not say that. It said watch now.
Okay.
People who didn't, not random people, but if you're subscribed to Apple TV Plus already, you got the watch now button, which you never got before. I think the number may have been a little higher because of that than normally it would be. Would it get to the number from last year? No. There's no way.
Yeah, and in comparison, so for this past weekend on the same day, on Saturday, the Dortmund against RB Leipzig game on ABC, and this doesn't include ESPN Plus streaming subscribers either, was just over 400,000. And then the game between Arsenal and Aston Villa, or Aston Villa and Arsenal, on NBC and Telemundo, which doesn't include the Peacock subscribers, was approximately 1.2 million. So, I mean, it shows that, I mean, really, you could look at it and say, okay, well, the Bundesliga is half as popular as MLS, maybe on over-the-air television, and MLS is close to being about half as popular as the Premier League in terms of over-the-air numbers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. In terms of the Bundesliga number, that was a head-to-head number against the Premier League. I have already gotten pushback. I know Bundesliga fans get very defensive mm-hmm. when this gets pointed out, but I guess it was Arsenal and Aston Villa, so it was a big Premier League match. But geez, I thought those numbers would be much closer to one another. I'm as someone who's very and we say this all the time, Chris, we're fans of the Bundesliga, and I know we beat up on them from a media perspective. Doing one third of the number at the same time is kind of embarrassing. And if you're Disney and ESPN, ABC, I mean, you're probably thinking, just like you opted out of MLS eventually, mm-hmm. maybe we're not going to renew the Bundesliga if we put it head to head with the Premier League and we're getting one third the number.
Yeah,
for a very big game in the Bundesliga, two of the three big clubs, really. That's not good.
Yeah, or if the Bundesliga expects more money than the last rights deal,
oh, forget it.
And then ESPN says, "Well, look at the numbers." You mean they might say, "Yeah, that's." You mean we're not paying that?
You put a sporting event on network television in the middle of the afternoon in the United States. The minimum it'll get is probably 300,000 viewers. So the Bundesliga just got a tick above that,
right?
Whereas the Premier League quadrupled that. So, Yeah, we're beating up a little bit on MLS, but I think that number is even more ominous for the Bundesliga. That's a really bad number, in my opinion.
I would go to say, Kartik, that we're fans of the Bundesliga. We're fans of MLS. We're fans of the Premier League. I think we're fans of all soccer. The thing about MLS I don't like is the system and the way it's structured. I feel it should be like others around the world. And yes, there's many different reasons why it is the way it is. But it's not that we hate MLS. It's just that we expect more. We expect better. It can be better. Whether or not it ever will in terms of MLS, especially talking about today's topic about them building the pyramid. At this point, it's almost unstoppable, right? I mean, can you foresee anyone kind of, going in there and preventing him from doing this?
So obviously I'm up here today for USL, a big USL announcement, which brought the president of both the USL Championship and the Super League to town. It was a big deal for USL, this announcement, and even their brand and all the USL executives were here.
Yep.
I think they have 18 to 24 months to get it right. I mean, that sounds dire, but they do have 18 to 24 months, and they have infrastructure. They have smart people there. I obviously interacted with some of them just a few hours ago. But if USL doesn't have a solid foundation for that women's league in 24 months, and the championship hasn't lost more teams, MLS hasn't gone in and taken Tampa Bay and Phoenix, all the places that Garber mentioned, then maybe they have a fighting chance. But I think there is a real possibility you're going to see, because there's a churn and burn rate at lower division anyway, that USL will start to lose clubs at the championship level, not be able to replace them. And so while I say 18 to 24 months, I'm not saying USL will be out of business in 18 to 24 months. It'll be 10 years, but or 8 to 10 years, but then they won't have the foundation to which to fight this. And they'll be like when I worked at the NASL, it was kind of there was a lot that went wrong, but it was just a matter of time. Before MLS picked us off and took us out. So I think USL's not at that stage yet, but they have at best 2 years to get the foundation right to where they can be competitive. Mm-hmm. Part of that, Chris, is promotion and relegation. We know the president of USL, Paul McDonough, is very big, a former MLS executive, right? He's over at USL now. Paul McDonough is very big on ProRel, and he knows just from private conversations, I know that Paul McDonough feels they have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason.
Yep.
And I think they will do it. But they got to get it. They got to get it in place in the next 24 months.
Yeah. And I think there's enough room for both of them. I mean, because the way I look at it, too, is that you look at MLS, what major markets in the United States, what major cities are they not in yet? And it's Detroit. It's Phoenix. It's, Tampa.
Those are the three largest metropolitan areas they're not in.
Okay. And there's probably, I'm sure, some other cities. I mean, Sacramento.
Sacramento is one of the larger TV markets they're not in. San Antonio is a little smaller TV market. There's also very much the possibility that they might start doubling up, right? They might start saying, hey, we can – if there's a market where there's an MLS team and a USL team, markets where they both exist, we're going to put an independent next pro team in there and take the USL team out.
Right.
Indianapolis is a little smaller market. I'm surprised Garber didn't mention that market, but that's one I know that they've been interested in the past. And Raleigh-Durham is another one they've been interested in the past.
I think that the question I have, the analysis I have, is MLS is going after the paying spectator, right?
Yeah.
The person that goes week in, week out to these games will open up the wallet, buy tickets, buy season tickets, buy merchandise, and go out on a Saturday night and have a good time and enjoy those games. That's not the same crowd as everyone watching soccer across the entire nation. I mean, most of it, whether it's Liga MX or Premier League or Bundesliga, et cetera, et cetera. So I think they see the opportunity basically to go after that, but and they can be very successful, as they have already shown that they are. But whether or not they're actually going to win over the entire soccer population and have more of them watching MLS. I guess that's my point, is I still question whether or not, as a TV product, right? As a TV product, this is a long-winded way of me getting into it, but as a TV product, MLS is still inferior to the competition. As a paid spectator going to a stadium, it's a fun night out, and it's, at that level, you don't have as much competition other than from other sports.
Obviously, the media rights bubble might burst, right? We see all kinds of issues now with college sports, with what happened with the Pac-12, because media rights is making up the bulk of revenue in sports.
Yeah.
For football leagues around the world, Premier League in particular, and then college conferences here and professional leagues here, NBA and NFL in particular, NHL less so. Major League Soccer, if the media rights bubble doesn't burst, Major League Soccer has to change its revenue model. They have to get more money from media rights to truly be competitive and truly be a top league on the global level. I'm saying that Serie A, by getting what is apparent, what is the equivalent of about 900 million euros over 3 years for their domestic rights package, is has left money on the table and will fall further and further behind the Premier League. And I think presumably Bundesliga and La Liga in terms of spending. So think about that. That is still per year from their own Italian domestic market, far more than MLS is getting globally per year.
Yeah.
So, and France, same situation. We're going to do something. I'll have a story on World Soccer Talk. Maybe it'll be next week on Ligue 1. They're in trouble with their domestic rights deal.
Yeah.
But all of these leagues are bringing in more media revenue than MLS. So how can MLS be a top league in the world at the top of the global conversation if their revenue model doesn't change? So I think that has to happen for them to be in the conversation, or maybe they're the smart ones. Maybe the media rights bubble bursts and they're selling more tickets than Serie A. They're selling more tickets than Liga. But I think we're not in a ticket-driven model. We're in a sponsorship and media-driven financial model.
Yeah, so which was a great point, because everything comes back full circle. Again, Don Garber's words, what he said kind of at the beginning of this podcast, we wanted to be part of the global conversation, and now we're the dominant story in global soccer, and the eyes of the world are on MLS. And really, what I mean by this is that also Don Garber admitting that it's risky, because what if they don't hit that minimum guarantee, whatever that is, right? Then alarm bells go off, because they're bringing in, what, $250 million a year for 10 years, so $2.5 billion. So $2.5 billion sounds like a lot of money, but like you said, too, in comparison to other major leagues from around the world, and the $2.5 billion is for a global deal for 10 years. So that's not enough to really move them into that top tier, or even into the top 10 soccer leagues from around the world. So whatever that minimum guarantee is, That's the key part of this, because if they don't hit that, then this is risky, because at that point they might say, hey, we gotta do something else. This is not working. We're never going to be that big TV product.
That gift went down well. Good job, you.
Fantastic.
Sounds like Sue's happy. Looks like everyone's loving their gifts. And you're able to spread the cost interest-free with Klarna. Big gifts, big reactions, smaller payments. Find Klarna at checkout this festive season. Borrowing irresponsibly may negatively impact your financial status and ability to obtain credit. Terms and conditions apply. Head to Klarna.com.
Just imagine what your best Christmas ever would sound like.
Thank you for calling National Lottery. I can see you're calling about a winner today. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think I have. I'd just like to double check before I do a cartwheel.
Yeah, I can confirm that you have won the top prize, $1.2 million.
Oh, my word. Happy Christmas. What do I do now?
You have the best Christmas ever. I gotta have faith. This Christmas, it could be you. The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Aeon Next, we believe life's better when you know you can get your hands on discounts across a range of home energy solutions, like boilers and solar panels, so you can treat your home to a bit of future-proofing. We think that makes energy a little bit better. And that's why we're always working towards helping you get more out of your energy. So visit eonnext.com today. Discounts available to Aeon Next customers ends 31st of December 2023. T's and C's, eligibility criteria and geographical restrictions apply.
All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got some great feedback from all of you listeners, of course. First up is Mike, and this is talking about last week's podcast about soccer shrinking, or is it growing, which is, again, a perfect segue with this podcast. So Mike says, great discussion. I think MLS and soccer in general need to find ways to be on network television. That is key to reaching a broader audience. Men's soccer needs more high-level players. Stars drive interest, and the U.S. does not really have any right now. MLS should be doing a daily or weekly show. It needs to be widely available. Fans need to get to know the players, coaches, staff, and fans. Something similar to the All or Nothing documentary for MLS, for every MLS team, would be amazing. So what Mike says, I mean, really is what MLS and Apple want MLS season pass to be, or have positioned MLS season pass. They have weekly shows. They have documentaries, in quotation marks, similar to All or Nothing. Or at least they have plans to. They got the Messi Meets America. They got a lot of content where you get to know the players, the coaches, the staff. But Mike's point, though, too, is really good. I mean, he wants this stuff to be available more on network television or not behind a paywall. And I agree with him.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think MLS and U.S. soccer in general have a problem telling edgy stories. It's funny. One of the other people at the USL event today and I got into a conversation about Clint Mathis. Because we were talking about great players from Florida and Georgia and like who could play for this Jacksonville USL team if it had been around 20 years ago. And we ended up with Josh Wolf and Clint Mathis. Josh Wolf, kind of a conformist, right? He's been successful in MLS. But Clint Mathis is a guy the U.S. soccer community shunned and didn't want to tell the story of because he was so edgy and he was so – his game was different. The way he talked was different. The way he expressed himself was different. And those sorts of guys are the guys you can build interest around. And MLS had Clint Mathis for years before he went to Germany, and then he came back. And they probably have other Clint Mathises now who are American players. So I don't think it has to be an American player is a global superstar. We don't need an American Neymar, an American Mbappe. I think we need to have Americans that are identifiable for kind of edgy fans. We need to have Americans that are cocky and trash talk and do those sorts of things. And MLS has never wanted to embrace that side. And it's not just MLS. It's U.S. soccer has never wanted to embrace those sorts of guys. Yeah. They've wanted to neuter the personality of so many guys. I mean, I think about leagues in Europe. There are so many of those guys in each of those leagues, in Serie A, in La Liga, in the Premier League, that you just you want to be entertained by them,
right?
And you gravitate to them even if they're not the best players because of who they are.
Yeah, I say bring back Zlatan.
Okay, that's a prime example.
Right.
Yeah.
Which that was. I mean, it's still somebody. If you mention Zlatan, a lot of people kind of like, oh no. He said some really kind of things he shouldn't have said.
By the way, before listeners write in, Clint Mathis is from Georgia. He's not from Florida. But we were talking about guys from Georgia and Florida since Jacksonville's right near the border with Georgia.
So Michael Lisi says, Serie A fan here. I think the best all those leagues can do is at least cater to the fans they have. If they are going to ditch the diehards to chase new fans, you will get neither. I'll go back to shady streams and save a few bucks. And what Michael's saying too is this is the discussion about Serie A fans and what that size of that viewing audience is or that community. I mean, obviously they're not fans of Serie A, they're fans of Juve or AC Milan or whoever it may be. But how big is that market? And Serie A obviously wants to get more money from the TV rights. But Michael's saying like, hey, basically if you're going to ditch the diehards to chase the new fans, you'll get neither. And then the diehard fans will go to illegal streams and watch it that way.
Yeah, I think that there's some truth to that. Michael, by the way, is an AC Milan fan. Great follow on Twitter. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in Italian football, he's besides Matteo Benetti, he's the next guy to follow. I think this is true. I think it's true of Bundesliga fans also. They kind of want to keep the identity and they want to keep the community aspect kind of the niche and hipster element. And I have to say, I always felt there was some of that with U.S. soccer too, right? Let's keep this kind of within our community. And so to Garber's credit, to MLS's credit, he's paid to grow the league, right? He's paid to grow the footprint. They're in a growth mode now. So he's talking in hyperbolic ways, but at least he's trying to grow that community. There are other leagues I feel aren't.
Yeah. Well, I think also he's looking at, Copa America, Club World Cup, World Cup, possibly the Women's World Cup, and then the Olympics. So a 5-year span of time where this is going to be the best opportunity for soccer to grow ever. And they want to basically own that market. They want to get as much money from this as possible. So I think that's why they're being a little bit more aggressive and kind of saying these things outwardly. Greg says, I'd agree that the audience may not be shrinking, but rather has plateaued. And I'd argue, paradoxically, that one reason is that there's just too much soccer on TV and streaming. Too many options to watch every match from the top 5 European leagues, and top matches in a handful of other leagues in Europe and South America, plus too many teams and too many summer tournaments. It's just too much. So it's not special any longer, and it's tiring to try to keep up with all of it. So the Premier League, the league that was first in with a big footprint, has all the stars, has great marketing from NBC and the league, and importantly, has matches on linear and streaming. Of course, they get 90% of the attention. I think that's right. If you're a fan of whatever club it is in the world, there's a good chance you can watch those games, even if it's through a YouTube channel, or if it's through streaming or through TV and stuff like that. It is very fragmented. Speaking of fragmented, Dave mentions, is soccer shrinking, or is the audience, the US audience, fragmenting? Some of your examples strike me more as potential consequences of fragmentation. Is there hard data to suggest one way or the other?
It's a great point.
Adolfos says, the lack of sustained improvement and success of the US men's national team in recent years has really put a cap on growing interest in the sport. The fact is that the US men's national team seems less relevant and less likely to improve than it was during the South Africa and Brazil World Cups. That hurts with the average sports fan that may not be familiar with the sport. And then Ernesto mentions Megan Rapinoe turned off a lot of dudes like myself to the US women's national team. Americans generally are xenophobic and stick to their silly sports, such as American football and baseball. And then lastly, Ryan Evans says, I really enjoyed your last pod about the future of Serie A and Ligue 1 in regards to their TV rights future. My question would be, out of these three leagues, the Bundesliga, Serie A, and Ligue 1, which of the three do you see Apple TV going after? It's been said that they want a European league. Which one would you think Apple would want and get?
So I think Liga is the most likely, because Serie A went ahead and settled for what I consider a bad TV deal domestically.
Right.
But they felt they need to stay on television domestically in Italy and maybe undervalued themselves. The Bundesliga has a great domestic TV deal, DAZN and Sky. I don't think they're going to give that up. Apple is interested primarily in global deals. And because Apple is primarily interested in global deals, Liga 1, who has turned down a potential domestic deal and has made the decision to go back to market and demand more money, maybe they're ripe for the taking now.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. So the next one is some of our listeners want to talk about MLS playoffs, because we talked about kind of the structure of it and how the new structure wasn't working as intended, or maybe it did work as intended, which is showing more games on Apple. Christian says, what do you guys think about reseeding after every playoff round for Major League Soccer, where the highest remaining seed plays the lowest remaining? This is done in the NFL. I think MLS should do this as well. It would give the regular season more importance. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, absolutely. I've actually been an advocate for reseeding and everything. I didn't realize the NFL does that. That makes me think a little better of the NFL. I've been for reseeding in the NCAA tournament. I know that screws up people's bracket pools, which is probably why they'll never do it. But that once you get, like in the NCAA tournament, you go from 64 to 32, I think you reseed the 32 teams. That's my view of how you do this in any kind of knockout type competition. I don't like actually the way Champions League is done when you get, or Europa League, when you get to the final. Well, Europa League now, because they've changed the format, it's not until the quarterfinals you have the problem. But I feel like there should be seeding of teams so that you wait matchups and you don't have two teams that shouldn't be playing each other in the quarterfinals playing each other. So, yeah, I think that would make the regular season more meaningful. And then I think as well, you have to do something to protect the higher seeds. And, Jesse Marsh now has a podcast, right, on CBS. He's now on the CBS He replaced Heath Pierce on there. Jesse Marsh is the guy who said a couple of years ago, maybe I shouldn't go all out in the regular season with Red Bull. This is why Jesse Marsh probably will never manage an MLS again. And why maybe he's done better in Europe than other American managers. Because now I'm learning, I go hard in the regular season, I'm at a disadvantage in the playoffs because of the way they've structured it. So maybe I'll get in as the last playoff team next year.
Right.
He never tested it because after he said that, he then moved to Leipzig. But it is something that the coaches are thinking. I think Marsh said that part out loud. I think the coaches are all thinking that.
Yeah.
You know, what's the point of the regular season if you're not going to protect us in the playoffs somehow?
Exactly. And then Carlos says, I will not spend time watching Mexican soccer. Why? I'm not Mexican. MLS, I rarely watch. Why? This is a composite of both MLS and the Mexican League. The announcers, men and women, they spend their time on idle chit-chats. They give coaching lessons and they give you the in and outs of the play. Now, why do I need that information, as neither team is going to adjust their tactics to please the announcers? But most of all, it's annoying. Give me play-by-play or just shut up. Stuart Holden is the worst. However, I appreciate his knowledge. Give him his own TV show or pre- or post-matches. He is not alone. The Mexican announcers even chat about their families. Who gives a crap? The MLS Liga MX Interplay League, I guess the League's Cup, was interesting but spoiled by announcers. Watching on mute is not an option, so I watched the Premier League for superior play and also play-by-play. Without the play-by-play, you never know who the players are. So unless these announcers shut up, I'm not watching. This applies also to the Women's League.
I think this might also be an American announcer thing. So I there were many years I didn't really watch American sports. I've gotten back into college basketball, as I think our listeners know, the last two or three seasons. There was a match which, Chris, you're going to love this. Dave O'Brien was calling a basketball game recently. Yes, just 2 weeks ago. Dave O'Brien and Jay Billis. And they were not paying attention to the game. Two guys got into foul trouble. They didn't notice it. They didn't know why they were off the floor. They were talking about, this and that and like extraneous topics. I think, in fact, there was a soccer crept in because Dave O'Brien said something about Anson Dorrance in the middle of this. Like, the great Anson Dorrance, in North Carolina. I was like, my gosh, this is appalling. So then there was a FAU game a week later, and Dave O'Brien, it was the same two announcers. And I turned it off within 5 minutes and listened to Ken Lavica, who's the voice of FAU Sports, and listened to his call of the game because they were doing the same thing. So I think this is an American thing, a North American thing maybe?
No, I think it's an American thing in terms of the storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really most American sports, that's just the way that I think.
And they weren't calling the game. O'Brien wasn't calling the game at all. And he hadn't noticed guys had gotten into foul trouble.
And Dave O'Brien, for those who don't know, tried his hand at soccer for the 2006 World Cup for ABC and was a disaster. I mean, I didn't know who he was at the time, but a baseball guy doing soccer, it was really.
And that's
really
why it didn't work for me in basketball, because there are guys who call basketball games. Mm. He's a baseball guy calling basketball, and he was treating it like a baseball game where you have all kinds of dead time, which I get.
Yeah, yeah.
Basketball is like soccer, it's constantly moving. And he didn't notice things. He missed on some things.
So Steve wants to talk to you, Kartik, about the Football League. He says, I'm glad to hear Kartik talking about English League 2. I wish ESPN would put matches on more consistently. Besides the interesting stories of Wrexham, Notts County, and Stockport, there's more down the table. AFC Wimbledon, a club with a well-documented and unique history. Salford City, class of 92 connections, and Forest Green Rovers, above and beyond environmental activism, to name a few. Four teams getting promoted also makes for fewer dead rubber matches among mid-table clubs. Yeah, and that's the shame of it, right? Is that right now, I mean, unless you're subscribing to iFollow, I mean, ESPN Plus shows maybe like, what, one or two League Two games a month?
Yeah.
So we're missing out.
And the Salford City Stockport Derby now to me is effectively the Manchester United, Manchester City derby. Really, when and I'm a City supporter, and I also support Stockport. I think I've said that before on this podcast. So I follow Stockport. We had a match against Salford late last season, which we drew, which cost us the automatic promotion, and then had to play them again in the playoffs and didn't get through. So yeah, there are so many great storylines in League Two, but it's tough for Americans to follow.
Yeah, totally. Especially when there's so much other stuff on. We talked about the fragmentation.
Yeah.
Last piece of the mailbag is from Chris about the NWSL. He says, when it comes to ION and their new deal with the NWSL for 2024, I think it's great. As someone who watches the WNBA, in addition to the NWSL, Scripps has done a good job with that property. Although I should point out that the ION simply airs the games while WNBA produces them. Scripps has also gotten involved with regional NHL broadcasts recently as well, mainly with the Arizona Coyotes and Vegas Golden Knights, though more teams may be added due to Bally's regional sports network collapse and Warner Brothers Discovery getting out of the RSN business. My friend who lives down in Arizona has told me that the broadcasts so far have been quite clunky in terms of the audio, especially if you're watching via Fubo or Sling. This is something to keep in mind when watching NWSL matches on ION, as Scripps could go either route when it comes to coverage.
Yeah, so my understanding is there'll be two ION matches a weekend, both on Saturdays, and that NWSL Productions is going to produce those matches. So it's up to NWSL, much like you're saying with WNBA, to produce it and produce the right product. So that's the plan. Two matches on Saturday will be on ION. I'm not sure about the other, how many teams does NWSL have now? So the other five matches a weekend, I'm not sure how that's going to be split up between CBS, ESPN, and Amazon. But I'm sure when we find out, we'll report it here. We'll soccer talk. But two matches for sure a weekend on ION, I'm told.
Yeah. All right, guys, I think that's about it. So if you do have any questions, feedback, or comments for us, let us know. There's a bunch of different ways you can get in touch with us. One is through email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can go to the website, worldsoccertalk.com, click on podcasts, and then leave your comments in the most recent podcast episode. There's facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Twitter is @worldsoccertalk. And then youtube.com/worldsoccertalk. You can post your comments there in the podcast episodes. Also, there's voicemail, which is 561-247-4625. And we can read out your comments on air through the voicemail. Kartik, what's going on with Beyond the 90? I know there's a lot going on, but let the readers and listeners know.
Yeah, I think a lot of coverage of what I just attended with you, Jacksonville launch for USL, continuing coverage of the soccer wars between NWSL and USL Super League, as well as maybe a look at this MLS Next Pro situation that we discussed at length in this podcast. So beyondthe90.substack.com. Subscribe if you're interested.
All right, Kartik. Well, thank you for being on the show, as always. And listeners, thanks for tuning in. Kartik, what are you going to do and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
This Christmas at Asda, we have a new treat to make the season even sweeter. Our extra special Irish cream profiterole stack for just £15. A tower of 38 light shoe profiteroles filled with an indulgent Irish cream mousse, drizzled with caramel sauce and lavishly topped with Belgian chocolate. We asked our new Chief Quality Officer, Michael Bublé, what he thought.
I don't think I can resist.
Put on a show this Christmas. Asda, that's more like it. Selected stores subject to availability.
We don't just do Christmas at Currys, we do it properly, by giving you just that little bit more. Like the new MetaQuest 3 headset, with groundbreaking mixed reality and a library of over 500 games and immersive experiences. At only $479, even the price is out of this world. And, as an added extra, it's free next day delivery. Going beyond expectations this Christmas at Currys. Free next day delivery available in most areas subject to availability.
This Christmas, why not give someone the gold scratch card?
You know what's great? It's a last minute gift.
Yeah.
Scratch cards.
We've got a tradition. We hide them in the crackers that we've made. So we put a scratch card in each of those.
Oh, wicked.
Do you scratch it all off at once or do you do like section by section?
Yeah, bit by bit.
To build up the tension.
Yeah.
Sort of like, ooh, next square. Ooh. It's such a great gift.
Yeah, it's fun.
Gift the gold scratch card with the National Lottery. Please gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Plus must be 18 or over.
At Aeon Next, we believe life's better when you know you can get your hands on discounts across a range of home energy solutions, like boilers and solar panels, so you can treat your home to a bit of future-proofing. We think that makes energy a little bit better. And that's why we're always working towards helping you get more out of your energy. So visit eonnext.com today. Discounts available to Aeon Next customers ends 31st of December 2023. T's and C's, eligibility criteria and geographical restrictions apply.